Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, host of The Big Story, Canada's longest-running daily news podcast. For 6 years now, we've been telling one story a day, every one of them about something that matters to Canadians. This spring, though, we're going deeper. The Big Story presents Pay Dirt, the inside story of Ontario's Greenbelt scandal. From political games to stag and doe parties, endangered species, RCMP investigations, and Las Vegas massages, you will hear the full story straight from the people who broke it. The Big Story presents Pay Dirt. New episodes every Monday starting April 22nd, and you can get them all by following The Big Story wherever you get your podcasts.
Find your frequency.
Controversial subjects with the facts can be tense, but we are a sub-science here to make things make sense.
Today we are talking about seasonal affective disorder. Sad, really. We're going to start with some what did we learn this week about your lungs and breathing, as well as fatherhood, and then getting into what seasonal affective disorder is, how can you mitigate it, what is it doing to your bodies, and who has it the worst?
Oh, what did we learn this week?
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Tis dark.
Yeah, this time of year.
So I honestly, to cope with seasonal affective disorder, this isn't explaining how, this is just what I do. I like, it's like, okay, I can have a bath finally. Like,
is this to do with your, what'd you learn this week?
Yeah, because it's breathing. Like, I love having baths. And then I've talked about this so much. I breathe in and I picture all the oxygen, like, filling my lungs, going through my alveoli, going into my bloodstream, and I leave my chest, like, so full of it that it kind of is, like, floating. Mm-hmm. I do it until it's, like, painful, until I think, like, this is what dying would feel like. Like, there's so much carbon dioxide building up in my lungs. It's so painful. Then I breathe it out. And
painful?
It feels so good. Then I squeeze my lungs so tight that all the carbon dioxide is now gone, and now my body is, like, starving and being like, I need oxygen, I need oxygen, until it's so painful. Then I breathe it in. And I
You're sick.
So I slow my, like, breaths down to, like, one.
To torture yourself.
Well, I find it so relaxing because you can't, and I focus on the molecules of oxygen and CO2 and how they go in and out of my alveoli, and then it's meditating because it's like, yeah. I don't think about anything but that. Anyways, so did you know that if you live to 80, you take a billion breaths.
A billion?
Yeah. Like, roughly.
Okay.
Which I thought was kind of...
That seems... How many breaths do you get? How many seconds is a breath? Because isn't a billion seconds,
it's so funny
because
when you start thinking about breathing, now you're thinking about breathing, it's like, you actually probably breathe a little faster than what you just did.
I think I breathe slower than that. You often comment on how slow I breathe.
I do.
Sometimes when we're in bed, you're like, why are you breathing so slow? And you're like...
Okay, like, probably when I'm stressed out and mad that you're asleep. They also say it's enough to fill around or a bit over 50 Goodyear blimps. If for whatever reason that helps you, if you happen to be near a Goodyear
that's
blimp.
That's the amount of an individual's breath.
Yes, that's a billion breaths. If
is
you live
in
to
and
80,
out one is in and out one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Is living to 80, so it's like you can croak before or after.
True.
And then, like, unlike the
famously,
heart.
You can die before or after it.
Yeah, just in case you didn't know that. Unlike the heart, which has pacemaker muscles built into them, the lungs get all their information from the brain. And, like, sighing is so interesting. I was just, because it's like,
like that?
Yeah. Well, it's saying that, like, it, as humans, it expresses sadness, relief, resignation, yearning, and exhaustion. It's like, that's so weird. Those are such different
things. You know what? Ernie does it all the time. And I think it's when he's like comfortable and calm.
So many mammals like, sigh. And that
this
thing
is
that,
like a breath more than like a verbalization.
Yeah. He goes like, but it is funny. You're like, you can't help but be like, you're annoyed. Yeah. But there are other things, right? Like resignation or relief. Like it is cute because I think sometimes I'm like, he's annoyed. But the sigh is such an interesting symbol. Oh, that's true. Symbol.
And sometimes when I sigh, you ask me what's wrong. And I'm like, no, it just felt good. I just go like, oh.
Yeah, well, that, okay.
Not that one.
I was like,
weird.
I was literally,
what do I do?
I'm like, yeah, what's wrong? Because that's whimpering.
Yeah, but sometimes I do that and it just feels good.
No, yeah, sorry. That one was funny.
I do that one all the time.
Yeah, that's a nice
and,
one.
But no, you'll be like, what's wrong? And I go, nothing.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm just saying,
I'm like, why are you asking?
Okay. Yeah, that's why sighing is cool. But they found that respirators, like respiratory therapists, when they had people on ventilators, they actually program them to sigh because it's better for your alveoli. It kind of wakes up different parts of your lungs that haven't been hit. And so anyways, it's just like,
that's cool.
They're trying to figure out like why, like sighing.
What about it? Yeah. Cool. Maybe you are like pushing more CO2 out. It feels so good. I love it. I love sighing.
That's what I learned.
I learned something that was about fatherhood, and it is that interest in fatherhood is steadily declining.
Wait, fatherhood specifics?
Yes. Now, yeah, like the study talked about how most things to do with parentage, most studies are, in this case, about women. Like often, you know, men get the bulk of things and straight couples get the bulk of things. In this case, they were actually like, we should look at men because we don't really think about a lot when it comes to like childbearing and stuff. So currently, over 1/3 of men in the U.S. don't have children, which is a lot of people. America's birth rate is now also below replacement level, which means like without immigration and stuff, their population would shrink, which is the case in a lot of.
I know. This is why it's like all you anti-immigration. People who are anti-immigration, it's like, you're dumb. Okay, continue.
So the study focused on young men, like I think high school into university age, and like how they're perceiving the future. Because they're trying to understand like, are these young men going to want kids or what's their perspectives on it? It showed that over the past 2 decades, the interest in having children among childless men has decreased. The number of men reporting that they do not want children at all doubled during those two.
How old are the people they're serving?
Like it's starting in high school, but it's over 2 decades.
Okay, okay.
You know what I mean? So they're trying to like just, it's an overall gauge. So in the last 20 years, the amount of men who don't want kids doubled. Men reported they wouldn't be bothered. More men than ever reported that they wouldn't be bothered if they never had kids. That doubled as well. And the percentage of people who were confident they did not want children, while that remained steady, it was the percentage of people reporting they were very likely to want kids decreased. Gotcha. That's where the biggest change happened.
Well, okay, over 2 decades starting in high school, that gets you to like late 20s.
Yeah,
it's kind of like...
No, I don't... It's not about like then following them. I think it's just like cultural trends of like what do young people want? Do they want kids?
Oh, I see.
More people are growing up now. Like 20 years ago, a high school kid was more likely to say they've... very likely wanted kids.
Yeah, sorry. My thought on this is that culturally we have kids later now, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't feel personally like I've thought about wanting kids until I turned like 32 or 33.
Yeah.
Like, although I do think on a survey of in high school, I'd say I would want kids. Like, so it is interesting. Cause like, I'm just
like when you're culturally impressed with what, impressed meaning like upon you, what you should do.
I just think it's interesting cause it's like, obviously in the past people might in the high school be like, I want kids because I'm gonna have them by 23, baby, because like that's you know, like I'm gonna get my job and the factory and have a kid. Like I just feel like it's interesting. I'm curious what happens if people are still wanting kids but it only just hits later. Them later.
Oh, this is what it's addressing. Like people who like the stats I gave you, Greg, were not about saying I want them later. It was people saying the amount of people who never want kids.
No,
has
no,
doubled.
Sorry. I'm saying you start to age, you become 30 and you go, oh my God,
now
I'm actually
fair.
Saying I want kids, which I think kind of is what I'm seeing happen to people in their early 30s.
Yeah.
Sort of for the first time saying my whole life I never wanted kids and all of a sudden I did.
Yeah. But I mean, obviously it's like cost of living, cost of child care.
Yeah, for sure.
People are less physically close often to families and things like that. Like you have opportunities around the world, like the situations and circumstances of a lot of people and money being the biggest one has changed, I think.
Yeah. Like I wonder, and like being gay is interesting because in that there would have probably been a bunch of gay men being gay and kids is so interesting because it takes so much work.
Yeah. Like, you can't kids take so much work for everyone.
No, but I'm saying like you can't bang a vag. Like work to get one.
Okay.
Like, I mean, you could bang a vag.
Yeah.
Like I would love to have bang a vag. If someone's willing, I want to have a baby. But I'm just like, it is really interesting to think about men and gay men being in those studies and how it would sway away from women. It's so much easier if you're a lesbian to get like a sperm donor.
Is it so much easier?
Well, you have a...
Like you can at least host the baby. Yeah, easier. The ask is lower, I guess.
Yeah, sorry, it's easier to have a sperm donor
What do you call?
What?
Why can't I think of the term right now when someone like has your baby for you?
Surrogate.
Thank you.
Yeah, sorry, like exactly. That's surrogates a way bigger are harder. Ask than adoption can be really challenging. Yeah. That's all. I'm just like curious what the gay input into that survey. But yeah, oh my God, kids. We don't got them, hence we have a podcast. Like, are you kidding? This shit's ending when we have kids.
Is that going to be soon?
Like, when, honestly, when side note ends kid
is when we have a kid.
I think so.
Or are we just going to be on here every week? Like,
I think I just honestly be like, I don't have time.
I know. That's what's really scary.
No, I feel
me.
Bad. Like,
I'm
to
scared.
All the listeners, like, that's really cute. Like, we might end when we have kids. Because it's just like, we have a kid. And like, I don't know. I want to have a paternity leave that's 7 years.
Yeah, me too. Gosh.
Yeah. Like,
hopefully by then there's just like universal basic income and we can all just like have our kids and just have a nice time.
Yeah, we're not having a kid in 2256 when that's going to happen.
You never know.
Hopefully by then podcasting is no, that's not okay.
I probably will be.
We love you all. We just
take a break.
Thanks to Audible for sponsoring this episode. Audible.ca is the home of storytelling, and we love to read here at Side Note, but we are so busy that Audible helps us listen on the go, like when we're walking, when we're running, not when we're biking. That'd be unsafe. The great thing about Audible is that they offer a huge variety of best-selling audiobooks, podcasts, and exclusive originals, so we are never bored with the options on Audible. I personally just finished BITCH on The Female of the Species by Lucy Cook on Audible. It was great. I actually sometimes like to read the book and simultaneously use the Audible audiobook as well. So I'll be like reading a chapter, then I'll know what chapter's done. Then I'll go on my run, listen to the chapter after that. That way I can get through books quicker. I also just finished Eleutheria by Allegra Hyde on Audible, fully on Audible. It was beautifully read. A really interesting sci-fi book. Highly recommend it to all. Audible is the destination for all your favorite Canadian voices, and you know we love to support the other Canadians. Join and listen for free for 30 days. Just visit audible.ca. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Do you ever feel like something is interfering with your happiness or preventing you from reaching your goals? For example, I'm addicted to my phone. I'm always on my freaking phone. And through therapy, I started to learn that it's a self-soothing exercise. And if I can just think of it as that, I can start to understand why I'm doing it and figure out ways to curb my phone addiction. Here at Side Note, you know we're obsessed with therapy, so we are obsessed with BetterHelp. BetterHelp will assess your personal needs and match you with a licensed professional therapist that you can start communicating with in under 48 hours. The counseling is done securely online and is available worldwide with a broad range of expertise available. Not only can you schedule weekly phone or video sessions, you know, you don't have to sit in the waiting room, you don't have to travel, commute, things like that. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor and get timely and thoughtful responses. BetterHelp lets you change counselors at any time, which is really important. Sometimes you have to really figure out who your therapeutic match is going to be, and it's more affordable than traditional offline counseling with financial aid available. Just head to betterhelp.com/sidenote to get 10% off your first month and join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp.com/sidenote for 10% off your first month.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Study time.
Study time.
Study time. Study
time. I'm sad.
Every year
What's
I have
that be- from?
What?
I'm sad. Or what is it?
No. Are you thinking I'm shy, Kristen?
Oh, that is what I'm thinking. I'm shy.
Every year I have to remind myself it's that seasonal affective disorder is real.
Yeah,
and
well,
it is, folks. End of app. But it is.
Actually, I have some contrary information.
No.
Yeah.
What? I did numerous of research. No, it affects melatonin and serotonin.
Okay, so I'll spit out one little fact right now. So it is, for years it was controversial in like the medical professional world. It is now recognized as a common disorder. And I also do think we're going to have to put a caveat for this episode that in this sense that I'm talking about, this is like a clinical diagnosis, right? Like you have seasonal affective disorder, which is like being depressed or anxious at a much higher level that it would be worth diagnosing versus just like, I feel a little gloomier in the winter, you know? Of course, there's a scale, there's a range.
But what are you trying to say?
I'm trying to say like, we're also going to maybe talk about our own personal experiences with this. And I'm not saying that it sometimes get dark, but I also think we need to know that when doctors are diagnosing this, it's like to someone who's actually depressed in a certain season.
Okay, so let's get into the, then it's like, what I didn't realize is that you have to notice it happened 2 years in a row.
What did?
Like when as a part of the diagnosis. By a definition, it's like...
Yeah, because it could have just been coincidence that you had it in one season.
Yeah, so it commonly occurs in younger adults and women. Symptoms are common in the winter and fall, ranging from mild to like moderate to severe. And they do say that you have to have feelings of inattentiveness, hopelessness, depression, social withdrawal, and fatigue for at least 2 years in a row. Based
like in that
happening
season.
In fall and winter only, and then spring comes and it heals. So it's like that's interesting because the reason I'm saying that is like you can't just go, oh, I'm sad one day in December, seasonal affective, like
right.
I think if it's your first time having that, is that it's like you should be monitoring.
Well,
this.
I'm also trying to say like as I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying also like sometimes it's easy for people to be like, I have seasonal affective disorder when it's like, no, you don't. You're just like. It is harder for everyone to wake up a little bit. Like depression, diagnosed depression is like when you can't get out of bed.
Things. No. It's like, I don't think I've actually ever had.
Exactly. That's where I'm going. Of course, when it's dark at like 4 p.m. and then also dark until 10 a.m. It's like that is sad and we get it like kind of bummed and feel different. But I don't know that we get like
I think
depressed.
That I have had seasonal affective disorder so much so that I actually have learned so many tips and tricks to tell that I'll tell you at the end of the pod.
Okay.
That keep me very happy in winter. But I do them because I know that if I don't,
you'll feel.
I can remember when I was younger, I was like, holy shit.
Fair. And that's why I'm saying there's obviously a scale, right? Like you don't have to be wholly depressed to be impacted by seasonal changes.
And like in the winter, I'm like, Greg, you have to do this crazy shit that feels not that good in the moment because if you don't, you will be sad.
Interesting.
Do you know what I mean? Like that's how I approach my fall and winter.
Okay. So the one caveat I was going to say, as I said, it was skeptical, like doctors were skeptical. They do accept it in like official diagnosis now, but in 2016, an analysis by
Trump was elected. Sorry.
Yeah. Maybe this is why the Center of Disease Control did an analysis and found no links between depression and seasonality or sunlight exposure. So like the rates were not linking strongly enough to see it as like a whole thing. But then I obviously have also other stats. Of like a lot of studies have found it. So that is just one perspective.
And it's like I also find summer really depressing because that's when everyone's having fun. And when you're not having fun, you're like, oh my God.
There is such a thing as spring and summer seasonal affective disorder.
Sometimes I like maybe think I'm happier in winter because when I'm out like cross country skiing and jumping in the lake and doing my things, I'm like, well, I'm happier than everyone else. Whereas in the summer, I'm like,
the symptoms of summer seasonal affective disorder
FOMO.
Are usually different, but it's insomnia, decreased appetite, weight loss, agitation, and anxiety.
Yeah, it's so much more the buzzy ones. Yeah. I mean, I drink so much more in the summer.
Yeah.
I you want, literally everyone's am so doing much stuff, more active.
Because we live in such a place.
No, but you know? I'm so much... It's great. It's so great.
What is great?
The summer. Yeah, like I'm just like, wait. Like, but then it's like when the sun's setting at 9:30, I can't help but just be like, do you want to like literally rage. Like, this is so fun. Okay, yeah.
So where do we go from here?
So, well, I'm like, a lot of what I was reading was like the physiology, and I'm like, it seems real.
Like, so what happens, right?
Yeah, that's well, okay, so melatonin, which is like a hormone that is controlled by lightness and darkness physically. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, I guess we should start with where it happens. And it seemingly happens the most in places where the sun, the shift in sunlight is like drastic. More so extreme. Northern parts of the United States, Canada, it's studied a lot in Sweden.
Right.
Like these are places where like you literally do have days where you very easily
don't see
the sun. It's
dark almost all day, especially if you work in like an office and you go to work in the dark and leave work in the
dark.
Yeah.
And then there, so like vitamin D is a direct, there's a direct correlation between vitamin D, which is synthesize using the energy from sunlight and cholesterol in your body to make serotonin. So it obviously makes sense. You're quote unquote making less serotonin. So there's like a direct physiological link that makes sense there.
Sure.
Yeah. Also, melatonin is used for regulating sleep. And when you're not seeing the sun, it increases and it makes you more fatigued. It makes you more tired. And you can see why that can lead to isolation and these things that people are always more sad when they're isolated. Like, yeah, it's just like, that's obvious.
Yeah, even outside of the like physiology, when it's dark and cold outside, it's just like socially you're more likely to be at home alone.
Totally. And then even if you think about,
you don't
like,
want to go outside and walk over to somewhere, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's a bigger effort to even drive somewhere in the snow.
Yeah. And like, I was just thinking about like COVID and colds. Like, you get more sick. Mm-hmm. Like, viruses spread more easily because more people are in contained spaces. Like, when you hang out with people, you're actually having to be really close and contained. Whereas in the summer, it's like, want to go to the park? Mm. And that actually, regardless of COVID, would have what does have impacts. They were saying, like, you get sick more. Like, you're just at home, isolated again for a different reason.
And even, like, you know, when we were in university and we learned about vitamin D, I was just like, this is the coolest, most important vitamin ever. And truly, when you're locked inside and you don't get a lot of sunlight, the impact of like vitamin D on your body changes.
Yeah, that's mainly when you research this. That's it. That's the physiology of it.
It's like vitamin one of the biggest
melatonin. Because that's the only way they can actually address it from a biochemical standpoint. And it really makes a lot of sense. Like, it's really not even that deep. But then, obviously, you're right. You can't just say you have it if you're having a bad day in the winter. But they are saying it's important to monitor yourself. And if you find 2 years in a row, you're consistently like, I'm sad from December till February, you can talk to your doctor about it. Because they can literally prescribe you things. There's really cool things in Sweden where they literally prescribe you like going like to the parks. like a doctor would
love
be like,
that that's a prescription.
Well, you know what
you're
I mean?
Gonna write this down and you're gonna take it to who?
No, but like some people need to hear things from their doctor.
Oh, of course,
not from their,
to be like, this actually will help you.
Yeah, like you are medically being asked this to
is a
do
treatment.
This.
Yeah.
Like if your job knows this, you say like, I'm going for a walk at
because
this time
it's like important for me.
And like my doctor said so. Sometimes people like you just
that's
need
true.
That.
No, that's totally fair. I wasn't trying to downplay that. I was just like, it's funny to have it as a prescription to be like, here, I'm gonna write it on paper, go for a walk.
Yeah But I mean, there's so many reasons why we know that would be helpful.
Walks are magic.
And then also they think it's so, two studies in Sweden found it was more common in women, and their theory was that women are less active in the winter than men. This is like, it wasn't a very, I didn't like
but
studies.
That's like,
but it was like, that was what they came to the conclusion of. They asked them a series of like survey questions. That's where they got to the bottom of. They were like starting to realize that men are either like playing more sports
like
or
winter
doing
sports.
More winter group activities than
that's
women.
Interesting.
In these studies.
Yeah,
that's
fair.
Not true necessarily.
Okay, but. Yeah. I mean, like winter sport, like hockey is so traditionally masculine. Like obviously there's lots of girls that, and women that play hockey, but
when I think about like Sweden, I don't think of hockey.
You're right. I think like skiing,
skating, cross country skiing.
Yeah, I guess I just meant like sport in general has sometimes been gate kept
for men. You're right. They get to go. Oh, maybe. Tuesday it's my hockey night, and like everything, no matter what that happens. Whereas maybe women, I don't know.
So maybe culturally, it's like ingrained. Yeah. Yeah, we don't know. That's heterosexual.
But don't you like? I feel
as gay. I don't know.
Like ever since getting into cross-country skiing, I've been so much happier in winter. Like, it's completely changed my life.
Definitely, it is really beautiful and nice to have an activity that you enjoy to look forward
that
to.
That can only be done.
Yeah, that yeah. Yeah, exactly. Because, like, you can run in the summer, and maybe you can run in the winter if, like, the sidewalks are plowed or whatever.
Or, no, but you can also do the winter running with, like, the special shoes and stuff.
Right.
Which might but be really what I cool.
mean, it would be cool, but what I mean is you can only ski in
oh,
the winter.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
so
yeah,
there's,
yeah.
like, this kind of appreciation when you're doing it, like, oh, I only have so many months to be able to do this right now,
yeah.
versus like running. Of course, it's still, you can only run in winter but you might be like, oh, but I run all year or whatever. It's not like special in any way.
And cross-country skiing, what's so cool about it is that you, unlike downhill skiing, you have to, like, we live in Toronto, like, there ain't a hill for miles, folks.
Yeah,
kilometers.
We're not downhill skiing.
Yeah, or you can go to, like, Blue Hill. Like, they call it Blue Mountain. It's a hill. You know what I mean? Like, there's not... You can do that, but the amount of effort, the driving, the all that stuff. With cross-country skiing, like, I was doing it in High Park. Like, you can
find
do it,
spaces.
It once you've paid for the equipment, which I think is overpriced, but, I mean, it's, like, I guess it's expensive. You then don't necessarily have to pay any after that. But then if you do, if you're willing to go to cross-country ski places, they're so much cheaper. And I'm like, there's actually nothing more beautiful. Like, even in
it's
spring,
like nature, yeah.
It's like, it's nature, but the leaves are gone. So it's like you're seeing into the forest. It's so beautiful.
It's really nice.
It's like its own type of
like forest walking.
And forest walking that I actually sometimes I'm like, is this
unique.
The most beautiful?
Especially when it's just snowed and it's like that kind of snow that's all over the trees.
Yeah. I know, right?
That's nice.
It's like
usually
people think of winter, they think dead, cold, dark, but it's like actually cross country skiing made me realize I think it's prettier than when it's spring, it's fall, or it's summer.
Yeah, it can be really striking.
Yeah.
You're right. I think it's only because, not only, but it can be so brutal in winter that's what you think of. But you wouldn't want to go skiing on a day that's like a winter storm. But the days when
totally.
It's still and it's like a bit sunny and it just snowed this kind of like fluffy snow, it's like gorgeous.
Yeah,
feels really magical.
And it's cool to be anticipating and excited for the snow because then you can go skiing.
Yeah.
Like, whereas a lot of the time you're like, oh god, it's snowing, I'm always looking like, oh, I want to snow and I want to go to High Park. Like, can I go to High Park?
I just was going to talk about like the percentages in different countries of sad. Can I talk about that?
Yeah.
So in America it ranges, so a place like Florida has 1.4%.
Well, yeah, because it doesn't ever get that.
Yeah.
Right?
And then Alaska goes upwards of like 9.9%.
Oh, yeah. Okay. We're going up to Alaska.
Yeah. So
okay,
you can, in that sense, you're like, okay, it makes sense that this is tracking with like who's getting less light in the summer.
Yeah.
Or sorry, in the winter. 3% of the Netherlands experiences it. 20% of Irish people experience sad.
Oh my God. I forgot about Ireland. Cause like every time there's an Irish movie, I'm like, that's sad. Like, it's literally always sad.
And just, like, cloudy.
And it's, like, cloudy. And they're like, oh, my God, it's rough out here. Like, and there's, like, Catholicism's beating us down. And it's always like, oh, my God.
I think you're going to love this fact. So, as you said, you were studying stuff in Sweden. It's very common in Nordic countries.
Yeah.
Except Iceland.
Oh.
Sad is, like, extremely low in Iceland in both men and women.
Because Björk is their leader.
She put in Björk.
Because Björk is there.
And Jonsi. So it was hypothesized that it may be a genetic factor.
Hmm.
But a study of Canadians who were fully Icelandic, like have fully Icelandic.
Oh, yeah, there's
background.
So many like in Manitoba.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So of Icelandic heritage showed also way lower levels of sad.
Hmm.
And then they started thinking, actually, maybe it's attributed to large amounts of fish traditionally eaten by Icelandic people.
Wow.
Because of just like the vitamins and like the fats and stuff that maybe actually help them. Like, but isn't that weird? Like, all out of all of Scandinavia, it's like Iceland's like, no, we're fine. Or they're just raised to be like, when you hear Björk talk about the winter and how harsh Iceland is, it's like
harsh winter, but then I listen to the timbres of the sound and I make myself.
She talks
a drum.
About Icelandic. In her recent podcast, which is the most incredible thing I have ever listened to.
It is
10 episodes chronicling.
I would go ahead and say, turn this off right now and listen to Sonic Symbolism by Björk.
Yeah. Sonic Symbolism. That's what it's called for sure.
Right? Yeah. Like, Sonic Symbolism.
So she has a moment where she's like, in Iceland, our attachment to nature, it actually isn't romantic. It's just so ingrained in us. Like, which I thought was interesting because I do feel
so
like my attachment to nature
is romantic.
It's like, it's beautiful. It brings me all this. She was just like, no, it's just part of who we are. Like,
wow.
We are connected to nature. And I was like, that's so cool.
There's something about Icelandic people being the only white people who I'm like, you aren't canceled. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm just like, it's so funny because it's like, no. Like, if some British person said that to me, I'd be like, I'm going to put your head in a goddamn bowl of water. Like, but yeah. Icelandic people, like, every time I'm just like, they know what's up. I'm like, of course they don't have seasonal affective disorder because they're eating so much goddamn fish. Yeah. And like Norway, I'm like, you're all secretly so racist. Like, it's like every other God. One is like, you like are like creepy. Icelandic people have like, I mean, obviously,
right?
I bet Icelandic people are like, you're ignorant to me saying this, but there's something about the lore of that very tiny country outside of it that it has such a big impact. There's like hundreds of thousands of people there. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And like, yet they created like so Bjork. Many
musicians. Not yeah, just like, Bjork, like a lot.
Yeah, Jonsi.
A Monster of Man. Aren't they from there?
That's when I'm like, maybe Icelandic people can be canceled. Kidding. I'm not saying they're canceled, but it's like, it ain't Bjork.
Yeah.
That's so, so rude. Special. Like, what's wrong with me? Like, I'm sure of Monsters and Men.
Yeah, they had some but great aren't songs. They,
they're very like, and here, there we go. There we go. Damn.
Not quite that, but it's like, you know, that sound.
It's like, hey, there we go. There's a little bit of high and a little bit of low. It's just like, it's interesting because I have glorified them through Jonsi and Bjork, and it is important I remember of Monsters and Men exists.
Like,
no shade.
Yeah, I'm like, why are you being so shady? I understand it's more like...
Because I'm a piece of shit. Like, as I'm, like, pretentious and, like, I honestly was like, if you go, in my head, I'm a dumbass. I'm like, if you go to Iceland, you're, like, putting your hands everyone's on moss and like, being like, Hundes, oh, and, like... But it's like, no, there are people there who are like, hey, ho, here we go. And it's like,
but like, line. I love that that's your like your line where you're like, and that just is not magical at all.
Well, also, I love Iceland. I've been there like 3 times. And one time I went there that was like violent fights at night.
Oh.
Because
like, people were drunk.
People were drunk. And it was usually actually fights like against like American tourists. Like I watched this happen.
Oh, fair.
And I was kind of like, obviously in my head, I'm like, well, what did that American do? But it was like very, very drunk.
On I remember all sides, there, yeah.
like, because you can bring alcohol from bar to bar as long as it's in plastic cups.
Okay.
And it was like Americans, I'm saying Americans because I was told this by someone. I don't, you know what I mean? I don't know. It could have been Canadian, but they were bringing the alcohol and in glass. And then they like got scolded. Like scolded. And then they thought that the people were picking a fight. And I watched this crazy fight go down. And I watched these Icelandic people like truly be so violent. Like it was like, but it was like also Americans fighting back. But I kind of had this moment of like, and it's broad daylight because it's Iceland like and it's like 2 like 3 a.m. But it's really bright. And I was like, okay, well, they're obviously not like, there's no army here, but they can fight. You know what I mean? Like it was like sort of like the whole time rustic. I'd be like,
yeah.
They have no army. They've never done anything. And there was like blood being spilled on like the streets. And I was like, okay, well, like use it to check yourself. Like of Monsters and Men. Is also from Iceland, is my point.
Yeah, and they probably don't get sad.
Yeah, they probably don't get sad, and they're probably, if they ever heard this, would be like, that literal faggot needs to shut up. I'm kidding. They also have good gay shit there, too.
I feel like I need to go listen to them again. I can't believe you have such feelings about Of Monsters and Men. I feel like I've heard one or two of their songs.
Me too. That's why I'm like actually like need that, to be sad. No, I know. I honestly like.
It's kind of good.
Not have a podcast. I probably would love it.
Anyway, that I thought that was really interesting, and that podcast by Bjork, Sonic Symbolism, you should go listen to it. It's like, even if you don't know her music, it's just,
it doesn't matter, it's so,
it's like an
inspiring
true artist sort of like discussion and deep diving into their process that through the years, it's just so fascinating. She's so interesting and smart and articulate. And
it's also inspiring. Goes through like history because she's talking about the time when the albums were released. So it's like recent history.
Yeah, like literally computers being invented and she's being able to, for the first time ever, she can like make music on her own on her fourth album.
Yeah.
She doesn't have to like go to a studio and waste time if her voice is sore that day. Like it's just interesting to hear someone who's been in the industry so long talk about the changing not like climate, but like, you know.
Yeah,
I mean?
Well,
like,
actually, and she even talks about climate change. And
it's all she cares about. No,
it's all she cares about. But no, she cares about other things too. But also,
it's all she cares about.
Even like the what I enjoyed, because she is sort of like a decade and a bit older than us. So the history kind of like the party scene of the 90s when we were in too young to be partying and the way that that music like changed people. And like, also the like hetero patriarchy of that time that we grew up with, how there were people her age who were challenging it, but we
just
were too young to really like understand radicalness. It. Like it was so
interesting. I feel like we have such a kind of crappy generation.
What?
Like not
Really?
Or I just mean we didn't like have like a cool moment to be part of, really. Or at least I wasn't part of one.
When I was in university, our moment was literally Pitbull and Black Eyed Peas being like, tonight is the night. That's a good night. It's like, it was like radical optimism, which is like kind of embarrassing in retrospect.
But yeah, hearing Bjork talk about like being part of these like scenes of like in Europe, it was like techno and stuff was coming and like it was like Club Kids and like all those cool
But I think that was happening.
Oh, but I feel like we were too young in those ages when we were like in university. Like there probably was other stuff, but I just have never been part of it.
Well, that's interesting because I like feel
this is movements, this is, you know what I mean?
Welcome to Side Note. We're going from seasonal vector disorder to culturally studying movements. I think that you and I have both had an abrasion. Is that the word? Abrasive?
Abrasive is the word.
Felt abrasive towards those things.
In the past?
In the past. And like even what? In the future, I need to clock my... Like
those movements?
Like movement. Like artistic movements. Like that's even collaborate... Like,
but what would you say they were? Like, because I mean, what I'm trying to say is...
she was talking about going to clubs in the 90s.
I know, but yeah. That's not what the 2000s are known for.
Well, in there, like when
I'm wondering what were the movements that we like look back on now that stood out? Like, you know how there's like the hippie movements and there's like the punk movements.
Yeah.
I know these are a lot of like often related to music, but there's even like revolutionary movements and stuff that happen in all these different time periods. I'm like, we grew up in a really stable time. It felt like in a part of the world that was like pretty affluent and like comfortable in a lot of ways that I just like, I obviously am sad in one way that I wasn't part of a movement, but even looking back, I'm like, what were the movements?
Like that's
that
what I
could have been.
I think that like when she was, we have side noted so hard, and I hope you're listening. Seasonal affective disorder. Like you just sometimes have to be interested in things and chat about them. But like I think when she was talking about the club like moment in London at the time, she was talking about literally the physicality of music. She was talking about staying out late. She wasn't talking about like a manifesto. She was talking about the way that music was being made versus America, where it was like rock, it was like electronic music. And I think that when we were growing up, there was a shift in the sound, like even thinking about like MIA and like there, we were living through moments where like I'm using MIA as an example because I remember being like, this music is so brilliant to
digital,
me
like
and it was like becoming more digitally focused. It was talking about how we were starting to live through the social media age. Even when I think about like Kanye West and like my beautiful dark twisted fantasy, like that music is so common now, but when we heard it, if you were like in LA or like even like a black person in hip hop at the time, that would have been the movement that you were a part of, that you would have been like, this has never been able to happen for us before. We were never able to speak like this. Even the way he spoke openly about like truly like black activism and things like that. Like that was that was our generation.
Yeah. I think I've said this on the pod before. It's like our movement is like we are part of the movement of people putting themselves online.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which in
totally,
one way I kind of cringe about. But if I think in 50 years, people will look back and be like, that was a pretty significant time where there was like a consciousness shift to like put yourself in the world.
And like being gay, like it was like we were experiencing like radical joy for the first time. Like we weren't like, I think in the 90s, it could have also been like that. She was probably talking about like queer club kids and like that is, but we still had that. Like I still felt like
of course
I was able to express myself openly.
That's
and I was
true.
Really
if you look at it that way, that
it.
Wouldn't have been possible like two decades before.
And it might have been that much harder in the 90s way. That like when I was like, tonight's gonna be a big good night.
You're like, I'm actually like, just having fun as a little gay.
Or even I just think of like Frank Ocean. I'm just like, that was so like I will never forget where I was lying in grass listening to a queer like black man speak to me in a way that I was like, I just feel like that felt like
maybe I'll be easier to look at it in the future. Like she's obviously looking back. Maybe the moment. And just like, because that to me is like a moment.
And
like
she's also
Frank
an artist.
Ocean is a moment, not a movement. You know,
but
he
but
might
I
be
think
tied
if I was if I was a musician, right? Like her.
Yeah.
And I'd heard Frank Ocean and had access to him. Like she probably like, you know, that could have changed everything for them if they were like a young peer of them.
Yeah.
And I even think like she was talking about the way that her peers and that party group influenced her music. Right. I just wasn't an artist. I was trying to be a high school science teacher. Yeah, so it's like, that's the other thing that you have to
remember. Just a different field.
Yeah. And like you're looking for inspiration for your art. And I think that that's the thing that I think about, that we, for whatever reason, I think it's like science or something. There's something about artistic collaboration and artistic groups that as a scientist, you're so devoid of understanding, because a lot of the energy is through things you can't study. It's through emotion. It's through like sometimes even just networking and like these things that you're just like, this feels like bullshit or bad, or even people who are like, you have to,
it's not expressive.
And I remember you used to find like artistic spaces really pretentious because you thought everyone was pretentious, but it's like, no, like, you know, Bjork would have been in 1,000 rooms with pretentious people, but that doesn't mean Bjork isn't there. But that's sometimes the rooms you have to be in
to find the other
people. And there are obviously in any setting going to be people who are more or less, but I think we've had an aversion to like the cool factor that sometimes people can put on.
Yeah, that's always been for me what it is like trying, and that happens even in the space we're in now. It's like any space, like you have to, how do you see through?
There's not that much cool factor in science.
No, but I even mean online, like I just mean non-science, you're right. Mm-hmm. But we're not really in like the science, like we're science communicators, we're not like doing science. I mean like in this like influencer, like online space, which I know is cringy in itself, but there still are people who are trying to be like, who's the one who's like, cool,
like Emma Chamberlain.
Or I don't even mean her, but there's always these levels of like, what are the currencies that people are using to like have clout above other people?
Yeah, I think the reason I bring up science is that when we were in university studying science, we would enter these spaces where there literally was no such thing as cool factor. Do you know what I mean? Like everyone, like, and I
no
loved
one was.
It was so democratizing to be like, I'm not kidding. Like everyone here's such a fucking nerd. Like it was the most.
You didn't
beautiful.
Have to feel insecure about how cool you were.
And it's like, I don't know what the science is behind this, but like every professor's like, well, hello. Like literally you're like, wait, why do you sound like a nerd? Like even the like it's Janet Wood, who we love. Mm-hmm. She had like that science teacher voice.
Yeah.
Then I would go into my art classes and it was completely different. It was like, holy shit. It's literally about cool factor. What you wear to class
like matters
impacts
almost.
Your like professor, because your professor looks fucking cool. Like my professors were giving me mushrooms. Like I'm not going to say which ones, but it's like, you know what I mean? Like, so I think that being in the science space didn't help
like expose
you to be like, okay, I have to change the way I judge this other space.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Yeah, no, I was definitely, and I was just like always introverted and like I don't like the word conservative. I'm not a conservative person. I don't know what the right way to describe
but you were particularly conservative in your younger age.
Yeah,
right?
But I don't like that word. I'm looking for another word.
No,
I'm
sorry, but like, no. But how do you take conservative out of its political ideology?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You weren't interested
like,
in...
That's why I'm like, introverted's also not the right word, even though I am. It was like...
No, but it was, you weren't interested in like, you didn't want to like radically change your environment or your thoughts.
Yeah,
like,
Anyways,
oh my God, Bjork. But that's the type of conversation it will spark.
I love Bjork so much.
I love her so much. I actually could start crying.
It's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. And it's...
The fact that she doesn't get sad.
What?
Seasonal affective disorder.
Oh my God. I was like, she does. Have you not heard about the Magical album? Oh, the fact that she does get sad.
Yeah.
The breakup album. Have we got to that one?
No.
Oh my
God. I'm just on Vespertine.
Oh, I love it.
We have to stop talking about it.
Okay, wow. Oh, my God. Okay, so guys, get a goddamn UV light. Okay.
Yeah, like that's what we're going to talk about now, like how to manage it.
No, okay. Well, okay, let's talk about how to manage it, because I really feel like I've turned a leaf for myself, at least.
Okay, being?
It's
eat fish.
No, it is finding a winter sport, and I think the easiest way to do it would be to like actually... getting a good pair of boots and going on a hike in the park.
Oh, I see. Because you may not everyone gets a lot of snow either. You could
No. It's thinking like if it snows, you go to the park, as opposed to if it snows, you stay home. That is something that like
fair.
I think is a really
but
good
I think
advice.
Trying to find a way to make it an activity as well that feels unique, that you can't, because just going to the park, if you're used to only doing that in the summer, could feel like a chore. It's going to be harder. It's going to be more uncomfortable.
You mean
find
something more unique, like do it.
Yeah, or somewhere else. Like, cause when
I want to say jumping into the lake, which I love to do too, but it's like, that might be a lot for people.
That is a lot.
But
it's not like we don't really go to like the same parks that we do in the summer. Like, you said you do go skiing in High Park. I don't.
Oh,
really.
You mean like going to Algonquin Park?
Yeah, or like making it more of a thing of like, I'm going to go do this winter activity. Yeah. Even honestly around... like Christmas or holidays, like having those kind, I think most people are fine up until like January because they have all these like traditions and cute ways to be like, oh, I'm going to have my mulled wine and I'm going to sit by a fire and we're going to go outside and have outdoor fires and a market. And then January, February come and you're like, it's just cold. And so it is like building in tradition and like activities that you can be like only can happen then.
And I think that what is interesting too about that is that the ritual pre-Christmas or whatever holiday you decide to partake in is rooted a lot in like the drinking, the partying, the fun. Mm-hmm. But what I also think is important about the it snows, you go outside, it snows, you go to the park, whatever the easiest version of that is that I think a lot of people go, okay, it's winter, that's when we get to stay in, watch a movie, drink at home. Right. And that's what seasonal affective disorder is getting exacerbated by, which is isolation and not, it's like some of these studies saying not physical activity.
Oh, so that was one of the biggest ones on the management is like physical activity as helps outside of seasonal affective disorder as well as like has been a really useful tool like that doctors and medical professionals can literally prescribe as well.
Yeah, exactly.
As so, like a highly useful treatment towards seasonal affective disorder.
And I think that's when it becomes a challenge and what I've turned a new leaf on is being like, it isn't going to be something you're going to want to do, but you're going to feel the benefits later, which is obviously like the hardest thing for humans. Like it's like that's what climate change is. We don't want to deal with it because
it doesn't feel good at first.
Yeah, but then the like
after effect, the long term is better for you.
It's like I kind of are.
That's why it's got to come down to habits for individuals. I'm not talking about climate change. I'm talking about this. It's like you can never overcome your desire to not go to the gym and stay at home.
Yeah.
Until you build a habit of doing it so much out of
that you don't dislike have to think about
that
it,
now you don't think about it and actually now it feels good.
Yeah.
And now when you don't go, you feel worse.
And also it might be nice to just know that seasonal affective disorder happens. Like I remember when thought it was bad and I wasn't cross country skiing and I would just be like, I would like just awareness, just being like, okay, I have to know that, like it's February. I'm allowed to be sad and like spring will
can
come
just help to know
and like things will get better. I think is also
obviously light therapy comes up a lot, right? Like there is evidence to show that having like a, like sometimes in like studies, they're actually using like these box lights that actually are really bright, but you can buy, like, we have one at home that we never use.
I know
the adherence to it is low. That's the biggest complaint, that you're supposed to sit in front of it for like half an hour to an hour.
And in my head, I'm like, I'd rather go outside and hike that day and get my vitamin D
than just
through
sit
my
here
face and
in
hands.
Front of a.
Yeah.
But something I hadn't heard about before that I came across is something called dawn simulations that more successful than lights. And basically, what it does is like for half an hour to 2 hours, like in the morning, before you even wake up.
Gotcha.
It's like systems of, like, obviously this is a type of investment. I don't know if it's just in studies or if you can buy things for this, but it was like, you know, having lights gradually get brighter over time to make it seem like a sun's rising, and having alarms coordinated in a way that like slowly get you up in a way that it's like that.
If you go to a gorgeous Swedish hotel,
you know what that used to happen on the Big Brother house. They did that.
Wow. Or if you go to the gorgeous Big Brother house,
they would like in the morning, it would be like 10 or 15 minutes of the lights, like slowly getting brighter.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Wait. And then, but then a voice would go, good morning, house guests. Time to wake up. And it would just like shock you out of bed. It was
although awful. It was like, you probably had seasonal affective disorder.
Couldn't touch the sun but twice a week. Yeah.
Oh my God.
On the American one, they have a backyard and it's in the summer. So they actually get real sun. But on the Canadian one, it's like 2 days out of the week, you can go into the backyard and it's in the middle of winter.
I mean, they probably want you to be depressed and anxious in that show, right?
Probably.
Okay, well, we hope you're coping. Yeah. Get outside.
Yes.
Do your best. And just know that it is real.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for listening, and we'll chat to you soon.
Awesome.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.